Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, did we get Wednesdayed again this week?
We're getting Wednesdayed again. Wah, wah.
We're getting Wednesdayed, but like on a Thursday, I think. Mm-hmm. Or a Friday.
Something.
I just, you know, fucking hate the Supreme Court. I'm just going to say, no matter what happens over the next, you know, 3 days and the 13 cases that they've yet to announce the decisions on, I fucking hate them. I'm over it.
You know, it's pretty funny because you have to assume that this decision is done and dusted, right? And yeah. So what I wonder is, like, you know, my mom always told me, damn into the torpedo. When you've got to face bad news, just take it head on. It feels like they might be being pussies with this one.
Yeah, they might be being pussies. Well, we'll see. This week, we are joined by Dana Schwartz and Julissa Arce to tackle the following questions. What does whatever the Supreme Court is about to do mean for the future of reproductive justice? Are we on the cusp of another anti-feminism backlash? Who actually deserves to be canceled? All this and more right now. All right. So, as we alluded to in our cold open, we record this show on Wednesdays. So, if something happens between Wednesday recording and Thursday release, we're sort of SOL. Mm-hmm. So whenever, you know, January 6th was a Wednesday. Good example of something.
Sure was.
We went in ready to talk about Hilaria Baldwin with SE Cup. We came out like, we cannot air this conversation about Hilaria Baldwin SE Cup. This week, we've got to hold it. Some stuff happened. So this week, the Supreme Court announced just before we recorded that there will be two more decision days this week, Thursday and Friday. Usually they only release decisions Monday and Wednesday. This is such useless information, and I can't believe how silly their rules are. But, you know, once or twice a year, we have to learn about their weird-ass calendar. It's like trying to learn the rules of cricket. I don't get it. So something tells me that there's some elderly justices who really want to get these like 13 cases out of the way real fast because they want to do like carefree rich guy shit. Like,
I mean, or they've watched too many episodes of The West Wing and think that they can dump the bad ones on a Friday and we won't notice.
That's true. But then they would have dumped it next week, which is right before a holiday weekend.
But you know what? Then maybe they didn't want to risk their holiday weekend being ruined by vitriol.
Right. Maybe they got to let it cool down before they can like peacefully get back to their
exactly.
Boat. They want to have like a week before they can like waltz into a steakhouse acting like a big shot. I feel like that's an activity of like really, really the most annoying type of beltway people.
Yeah.
Like the steakhouse big shots.
Yeah, it's like, let's go to the Cap Grill and have a Stoli Doli.
Oh, my God. I saw Kevin McCarthy at the Cap Grill in D.C. one time, just thinking he was the greatest. And it's just like, God.
That's the difference between me and Kevin McCarthy, because I would go to the Cap Grill just for the Stoli Doli, because it's all I could afford.
I would go to the Cap Grill and be like, all I want is a giant piece of meat, and this is nothing to be proud of. I am like, this is a shameful exercise for me. You know, in the talking about the Supreme Court, there's a few important cases that are going to come down before the end of the term. Dobbs is the one that we've all had our eye on because that's the one that everyone thinks will flush Roe down the toilet. And Alyssa, you and I don't know the outcome of that case.
No.
Like,
no.
Only the justices do, right? Like, yes. Well, the justices and like probably Ginny Thomas and whatever insane people.
She's probably got it on text somewhere.
Yeah. Frickin' Dobbs. Whatever insane people. She says frickin', not me.
She totally says frickin'.
I just think, like, it's funny to imagine that, like, one of the most consequential decisions in American history, because half of the population requires more than half the population requires reproductive health care. So it's one of the most consequential decisions in history. And it's kind of funny, like, bleakly funny to imagine, like, Ginny Thomas, like, you know, having a couple glasses of Chablis and then scrolling through her contacts and be like, who am I going to text about this? This is all just, I have no idea what.
No, this is just making us feel a little better.
This is fanfic about Ginny Thomas. So maybe 30 people, let's say. Maybe 30, some clerks, some justices know what is about to happen. But
right.
People are going to listen to this knowing what happened. So in that spirit, we're going to record three different news portions about this.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
Like in the movie Clue, how they do all three of the endings, you know?
Yes.
Or in 30 Rock, when they pre-tape a disaster relief segment with Jenna.
To be ahead of the game.
To be ahead of the game and win the ratings war, you know, to help the people, the thing that happened to. So in that spirit, we're gonna tape three outcomes. So here's outcome number one. Something close to the Alito draft that was leaked a month ago is the final ruling. And not only is Roe overturned, American women have been tied to a rocket ship with the Federalist Society logo on it and blasted back to 1873. So, Alyssa, that just happened. What the fuck?
What the fuck, Aaron? Seems like what we thought was going to happen has indeed happened. And abortion is no longer safe and legal, but will still happen.
Yes, it will happen unsafely. It will happen illegally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is far from the start. There are states across the country that are trying to pass crazier and crazier laws. The reason I said 1873 is because that was the year of the Comstock laws, which made it illegal to distribute information about contraception or abortion over mail, because there was a guy named Comstock who was America's foremost prude. Read up on him. He is one of the craziest bitches in American history. So we're heading back there. You know, you and I are in blue states.
Yep.
I fear for the future country that my daughter will be growing up in.
Mm-hmm.
And I fear for the future that everybody, especially people who are more marginalized, are already living under.
Yes. I mean, if this is the ruling, in about half the states in America, abortion is now illegal.
Yeah. And here's something that really, you know, makes me furious. There's always a sort of flippant dumbass who is like, well, you can just move. Or like offering a very complicated solution as though it's a simple and easy solution. Another one is just adopt. Well, there's always adoption. Okay, fucko, you carry a baby for 9 months and then go through all of that and then just relinquish the baby.
Like it's easy.
Like, are you fucking kidding me? You're going to go through 9 months of that and then just be like, you know what? You know, this was fine. Now I can just adopt. My body isn't changed forever. You know, this isn't a long recovery. No matter how I give birth, you know, this isn't a major ordeal. This isn't going to fuck with my mental health. This isn't going to fuck with my physical health. This isn't going to fuck with my sexual health, with my relationships, with my ability to work. I can just adopt. Fuck you. Also, just move. That's another one that
just move.
That's another one that can completely fuck off. People grew up places. People have roots. Just because—
People have jobs.
Some people lack economic mobility. It's expensive to move, especially if you already have kids, especially if they're in school. What are you supposed to do?
Especially if you have a mortgage now and interest rates are growing up.
Yeah, that's— There's a lot happening. I want there to be a holiday where all the, like, I want there to be, like, identified dumbasses. Like, you know, you get something in the mail that's, like, a jury summons. It's like, hey, you're a fucking dumbass. No talking. The last week in June, it's a dumbass free week. You get a free vacation to this mountain cabin where there's no Wi-Fi and no talking. Free vacation. But, you know, nobody else has to listen to you for that week. We need a dumbass vacation. Okay. That was pretty good. That was a good option.
Yeah. Works.
If the Alito draft is close to what's released, I think that works. Okay. Option two. SCOTUS strikes down Roe, but only by upholding the Mississippi law, which bans abortions after 15 weeks, which means that abortion access is seriously weakened, that Roe is essentially overturned, that Casey is essentially overturned, and also conservative justices that swung away from Alito look like heroes, right?
Right.
Like whatever conservative justices behind the scenes are doing the maneuvering, they're going to come out and be like, wow, heroes to America's moderates. Alyssa, I'm going to say who those people, it would probably be Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh. Are they heroes? Are Amy Coney Barrett? Okay.
No, they just scared of protesters at this point.
They're scared of protesters. And I think they just want to have their abortion and, eat it too.
That was grosser than when you what you said last night.
What did I say last? Oh, don't throw the abortion out with the bath
water. Bath water.
Yeah. That was that. Let's put a pin in that one. I'll bring that one up too in our personal political conversation today because I got it. I got it in my back pocket. Yeah, I think that this was something that Roberts wanted in the first mm-hmm. place. You know, if you listen to legal analysts like on our other Crooked Media podcast, Strict Scrutiny, which has been completely amazing as a source of information on this, you know, Justice Roberts is somebody who fancies himself a reasonable, moderate, by the law kind of person, even though he's very conservative. And I think that, you know, most people who are Supreme Court watchers and reporters think that Roberts wanted it to come out this way so that they would be able to be credited for weakening Roe, but also not be these insane, like completely out of line with the American public's opinions, out of touch body that is losing relevance by the day, even though it is.
Also, I think that he has enough ego and hubris that he doesn't want the Supreme Court to devolve into utter chaos on his watch.
It already has.
I know, but you know, it could get worse.
Right. I mean, remember when he saved Obamacare? That was crazy.
I know.
That was crazy. Which brings me to option number three. Outcome number three
is
something insane happens that nobody predicted. And Roberts has somehow figured out a way to save both face and Roe v. Wade. So they issue one of those mealy-mouth opinions that kind of just like kicks it back down to the lower court, which would strike the law, I believe, and also kick the can down the road so that maybe the Supreme Court can do the same thing the next time a case like this comes up, because there are plenty of cases that are coming up. But this one is so like... it's so stinky from like the leaks and the Alito of it all. It's just kind of, it's like stinky.
Moldy.
Yeah, it's really stinky. Nobody saw this coming, Alyssa. Did you think
God,
this would happen? I know.
I
what a surprise.
So nobody. Scoop.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's just like in 2012, was it, when Roberts saved Obamacare?
13?
2012 or 2013.
Sometime in the middle.
During the salad days, Alyssa.
Oh, God.
It was such a great time.
It was heaven.
Summer music was like 90% bops. It
I
was
miss
like
my bops. I miss my bops.
I mean, Beyonce is attempting to bring them back valiantly. So,
I mean,
2012, 2013 was maybe the peak of my adult life. It was very fun. You know, in terms of like the socio-political situation.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody was feeling pretty good. Obamacare was saved by a vain chief justice. You know, I'm shocked. I'm shocked this happened. I'm shocked the Supreme Court didn't go ham. But I expect that they will go ham in the future. And I hope people listen to us when we warn about it from now on.
Yes, yes.
Because look at the states are showing their hands. Look what
they're
doing.
They are. They're ready to fucking go. I mean, they're all ready. All of their activist groups are ready. They are ready.
Yeah. So I got to say, it's been over the last maybe like 5 years that I realized that maybe my strategy for dealing with this sort of wing nuttery throughout my adult life has been like, I'll just wait for them all to die. Like, I'm a lot, you know, all these people are old. I'll just stick around. Eventually, they'll be dead and I'll still be alive. And here's the thing. I think that while their numbers are dwindling, the people who are kind of at the tip of the spear for conservative pet causes are mm-hmm. so annoying and so awful that they've driven most reasonable people out of public service.
Yeah,
at
I agree
this
with that.
Point. And it's like I'm not going to outlive them because there's always going to be one real young idiot.
I mean, the youngers are crazy now than the elders.
Dude, did I tell you I got a DM from Tommy Lauren?
No.
She DM'd me and asked me if I would go on her show. And I was like, I said something diplomatic. Where I said, you know, can I see reels of you talking to somebody with my opinions on your show? I'm not interested in having a conversation that is just talking point sword fights.
Right.
I'm not going to go on her show because I'm not interested in being on the radar of the type of person who watches her show.
100%.
You know, and that kind of brings me around to what I'm saying is like, I'm not going to outlive these people. Like there is enough people that are just off their rockers.
Yeah.
That it's like public service feels dangerous and at the very best annoying for a lot of people.
As someone who was a public servant for a long time, there is nothing you could offer me that would make me go back. Nothing.
Yeah. Well, we got to fix it because people like you and me have to start like running for
shit. I know. But it's like,
you know what?
Think about it. Look at what they did to the election workers. Utterly nonpartisan, hard fucking working people whose only joy, not only joy, that's hyperbolic, but whose professional joy was just making sure people voted. They didn't care for who, and they have run them out of the system by targeting them and making their lives miserable. So
yeah,
we're up Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, we're up Schitt's Creek. And that concludes option three, but it segues nicely into what we were going to talk about anyway, which is something that we know happened, which is the January 6th committee met again this week. And as Alyssa alluded to, it basically painted a picture of a fandom congregation of Donald Trump who are just rabid. Completely devoted to ruining the lives of anybody who stands in the way of Donald Trump getting what he personally wants, which is very weird to me.
It's terrible.
It's like Mad Max, but worse costume design. You know?
Bad, oversized, cheap suits.
Yeah. And none of them can drive. Have you ever been on a highway with one of the Punisher truck people and you're just like, ugh, this person.
Those trucks are scary.
They're scary because they're so big that, you know, they will get into accidents because those people can't drive. And they're big enough that they can hurt people.
And the actual Punisher logo is in fact terrifying.
But also like the Punisher hated cops. That's like the one, that's like the first.
Good
I don't know
point.
Any, I don't know anything about like comic books at all. Not because I you know, it's just not my thing. But that's the one thing I know about the Punisher is that he did not like the police. That's
what
like
are we gonna do?
His main thing. Okay, so let's get back to the January 6th committee hearing. Alyssa, you mentioned the poll workers who were totally terrorized by misinformation, disinformation. I want to talk a little bit about Rusty Bowers, which I do not believe is a real name. It's a dog name.
I know, but a seemingly a good man.
He's trying to be a good man, except he thinks God wrote the Constitution, which we are all skipping over the fact that that is an objectively, that is wacky.
That is wacky, but
that is some Southwestern wackiness. And we really need, that is some like, you know, we, no, God didn't write the Constitution. A bunch of like 18 to 25 year old dudes who didn't want to pay taxes did. And then plus one horny old guy, Ben Franklin, you know, like, anyway, I was impressed by him. He seemed like he was doing the best that he could within his moral framework. What did you think of Rusty Bowers?
I was into Rusty. You know, it's like it's something to really think about, right? When you have the White House calling you. Like right now, I guess it's so hard to think about because Donald Trump has so diminished the office, but like these people were calling him. And he stood up to them. And that is, I mean, in the same way that the elected officials in Georgia did. And that's not a small thing. Because what we learned yesterday is that this wasn't some, like, ham-handed, drunk Rudy Giuliani play here. This was, they were really coordinated. They had a real fucking plan. Like, they had made all kinds of, like, real lies up that they were trying to feed these people. It just, it seems it wasn't as, I guess, juvenile a plan or strategy as we may have thought. You know, there was really, there were a lot of players, and they were all working to get these people to overturn what was a free and fair election. And so, Rusty, I mean, it's so interesting, and we were talking about this a little yesterday, but it's like, imagine if like, we always say we never want to overly praise people for doing the bare minimum. But I think about if Rusty had been a Democrat, right? It would have been so easy for Trump to be like, conspiracy, conspiracy. See, they're not doing it. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, these two states that ended up being so critical to the outcome of the election, Georgia and Arizona, having Republicans in place, I mean, has actually kind of made this something for which Donald Trump may actually get in trouble for, because they're Republicans. They voted for Trump. I mean, I think that's the other thing with all this, is that these people fucking voted for him and they're still like, dude, stop.
Yeah. Well, and Rusty Bowers did say that he would vote for him again, which is like, okay,
batshit.
You look, he had me
You're testifying before Congress right now because he tried to pressure you.
Oh, my God. It reminds me of that meme that's like, they had us in the first half, not going to lie. That's how I feel about it. I'm like, okay, Rusty.
I think Rusty, though, may be saying this because he just, look at the onslaught that these lunatic MAGA people have rained. Like, they have rained hellfire on these people that were just following the law. So I guess if I were him, I might say I'd vote for him, too, just to sort of like make sure there were fewer nuts on my lawn come tomorrow.
Right. So I'm gonna be paranoid here, or I'm gonna put my dystopia hat on.
I love when you do that.
Here's a question that I've been asking myself a lot, because you know, you have people like Rusty Bowers, and you have you know, those poll workers in Georgia who were, you know, victimized by MAGA people, and they talk about, you know, with Gabe Sterling and all of these. All these people saying they got all these death threats and people calling the cops. Here's my question. How many of those people were real? And I don't mean that these people are making things up. I mean, I think that there are forces on the right that use like Russian-type tactics and possibly employ bot armies and like other
things agree. That,
in order to kind of like egg on they're the small number of people who are very frothy about them.
Right.
So I do believe that there is, the Amber Heard stuff also.
Yeah.
And Gamergate stuff. Like, a lot of the people, I think that eventually we will find out that a lot of the people sending death threats and amplifying these messages were bots. And what that served to do was encourage the much smaller than we think number of people who were like on the edge of like being nuts to actually be nuts. It was like, does that make sense?
No, it's kind of like a safety in numbers thing, right?
Right.
That, like they thought that they had, if you think there are hundreds and thousands of people on your side, you're going to feel like a hero if you're the one who goes
to Comet Pizza or whatever.
Or goes and shows up at Shay Moss's grandmother's house and tries to make a citizen's fucking arrest, you know? There are enough people who do the in-person shit that you don't want to hedge.
Right.
You know?
Totally. And I'm not downplaying the fact that these
people were
legitimately threatened. I think that the real people making the threats were probably egged on by some Russian-ass disinfo troll farm.
Yeah.
Extremely weird stuff. And here's another reason that I think that is the case. Like, there have been all of these right-wing events that were supposedly going to be, like, massively attended that just, like, you know, maybe had a lot of buzz in the right-wing media sphere that just ended up having, like, a small number of people there.
Do you mean, like, Trump's inauguration?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think if you checked Twitter and, like, extreme Trumpy Twitter, and again, this is just me. I'm just guessing, but based on how a lot of these like viral shitstorms resulting in death threats have gone, I believe that there will probably eventually find out that there has been some amplification. And that, I think, is so awful and so damning of the types of tactics that the Trump team is willing to employ. They're willing to distort like internet reality in order to froth up dangerous people. And wow, that sucks. They're bad people.
I think you just summarized his entire presidency in one sentence.
Wow, that sucks. Yeah, I did. I did attend college. That's true. Let's see. One more quick thing. You know, we don't have the ruling in Dobbs yet, but I did want to circle back to abortion. Why am I using corporate speak lately? Circle back. Is it because I miss going into an office?
No, you do not miss going into an office.
I am wearing a blazer today.
I know. It's beautiful.
I got it from Target.
I love it.
We're going to circle back to the abortion thing because I think it's important for people to understand that it's not just, you know, a court making a decision. There are real people who are impacted by this right now. And there are clinics across the country in states with trigger laws on the books that are halting appointments for abortions because the minute that the ruling comes down, legal abortions will end in the state. My home state of Wisconsin, Planned Parenthood is not scheduling abortions after June 25th. Oklahoma and South Dakota basically can't get legal people right there who need reproductive care, cannot get an abortion in Oklahoma and South Dakota. Missouri is not accepting new appointments at their only abortion clinic. It is, it's not great.
It's not good.
The Red River Women's Clinic in Fargo, North Dakota is still open, fully open. But, you know, if the Supreme Court case comes down the way we think it's going to, trigger ban. So that's pretty bad.
So I feel like none of the practitioners actually think that scenario three in our news is going to happen.
What would you do if it did? Like, do we celebrate or are we just sort of, celebrate by not crying?
I think we celebrate by not crying because it's not over. You know, this Supreme Court's going to be the Supreme Court for a really fucking long time. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's like they'll see. I mean, if it is scenario three, they'll see how people respond.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would respond to it like a clean bill of health from the doctor. You know, it's like, okay, I don't celebrate going to the doctor and the doctor's
right,
like, you're fine. It's like,
you're like, cool.
Good. No further testing necessary. So I think that a lot of people, if it is scenario one or scenario two, by the end of the summer, I think that there will be some, a lot of people will realize that it's a lot worse than they thought it was going to be. What an up way to end the news. We were going to talk about the shooting in Uvalde, but we've run out of time. So hopefully next week we can talk more about all the ways that the cops completely failed.
Abdicated all responsibility to the children in that room.
It was like, you know, real quick before we end, it was as though the police are all like the dumbest and most cowardly people in town. They've been given guns and told that they're the only ones who can protect people. And then they just don't do their jobs.
The door wasn't even locked, Erin.
When I first heard that, I thought darkly about, you know, that Far Side comic, Midvale School for the Gifted, where it says pull and the kid is like pushing. I was like, wow, those are the cops, except they're supposed to be rescuing people.
Right.
And they cannot even open a goddamn door.
Nope.
Just horrifying. Okay. We'll talk more about this in the future as we get more updates on it. Each one keeps getting worse. But first, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a couple more people to join us for a discussion about whether or not the future is still female.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And welcome back. Welcome to the future. The future used to be female. The future was female, right, Alyssa? The future
for a little while
was female. Is there a tense in English that is like the future was once this, but now is not that?
I think there's a in French there is such a tense, but not
probably
here.
In Latin, maybe in like Hungarian, Finnish.
Yeah. We're big in Hungary.
Yeah, we're huge. Are we?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Wow.
We were a top podcast in Hungary there for a while.
That's great information. I'm really excited to talk about this with this group of wonderful panelists today. So I'm going to bring them in right away. First off, she's a writer. Her book, You Sound Like a White Girl, The Case for Rejecting Assimilation, is out now. Go buy it. Jaleesa Arce, welcome.
Welcome. I don't know why I just welcomed myself.
It's welcome. Like when you get food and they're like, enjoy your meal. And they're and you're like, me, you too.
You too.
Yeah.
You too.
Yeah, you too. I don't know. I haven't touched my coffee yet. I also just wanted to give a really quick thank you to the Hysteria listeners that have been coming out to all my book events. And they tell me how much they love the show and how they heard about the book because of the show. So thank you all for having me on. And thank you to the Hysteria listeners who are so supportive.
They're just the best.
Y'all are the best.
Absolutely the best. Up next, she's a New York Times bestselling author. Her book, Anatomy, A Love Story, is out. If you haven't read it already, I think everyone's bought it. But if you haven't, you should buy it. She also has her own podcast, Noble Blood. Dana Schwartz.
Thank you so much for having me. This is very
welcome.
Exciting. I feel like as soon as literally when Caroline, the producer, texted like, okay, do you want to come on? Are we talking about? I started typing like I was like, oh, the article. We're talking about the article. Great. I'm so excited.
Oh, this is a week where we have two the articles.
Oh,
there's like which one of them is going to be my I feel petty. So don't worry. We're not missing out.
I mean,
that,
yeah, it's article. A big article week.
You don't want to be the main character on the internet. Right?
Never.
No. Although I think this is a good example of the article where the writer, Michelle Goldberg, who I think is one of the New York Times' greatest columnists, especially now, she's not the like person. Nobody's like, oh, Michelle, what are you doing? But Michelle Goldberg wrote a piece that was in the New York Times this week. The future isn't female anymore. And it's basically about a shying away from the term feminist by younger people, younger women, and kind of infighting among people who should kind of be agreeing on a lot of issues, but instead of defending territory that we've gained, they're like arguing semantics or getting into slap fights and sort of like ignoring that. And then conservatives, before you know it, nobody gets an abortion anymore. We all have to be pregnant. We all have to give birth. That sucks. So this is sort of a great opportunity, I think, for us to talk about this. I think it's like Goldberg's piece really, really honed in on something that I think a lot of us have kind of felt.
Yeah.
And that is like the term feminism and contemporary feminism hasn't really done much for us, and it hasn't really advanced much for people. It feels like more of a, to a lot of people, it feels like more of a superficial title that doesn't really have a lot of heft in it, instead of an ideology that's about like skull knocking and boat rocking. So, Jaleesa, you came with an annotated copy of a book. And so I really want to start this conversation with you. What did you think about Michelle Goldberg's piece? Do you agree that contemporary feminism has become sort of cringe and it's slowed down due to infighting? What do you think about this whole conversation?
I thought the article was a little cringe.
You did?
For me. Yeah. Because I felt like she never really told me exactly what it is that she was feeling. I was like, is she trying to defend feminism or is she trying to point out the things that are wrong with feminism? Is she invalidating the very real concerns that particularly women of color have brought to the forefront about feminism? Like, I could never quite get what she was saying. And mm-hmm. it left me feeling like she was trying to defend feminism and never quite really hit on the points or validated, really truly validated mm-hmm. the issues that people have brought forward. And I think part of what made me feel so like, about the article is that, and about maybe about feminism more broadly, or white women's feminism, to be completely honest, is that it seems like feminism to her, based on the article, is about two things. It's about reproductive rights and domestic abuse as it was displayed, you know, or maybe took a step back, whatever side of the field you're on with Amber Heard. And so if feminism is only those two things, then mm-hmm. then it's not encapsulating everything that mm-hmm. to me as a Mexican American immigrant woman, feminism is about. There was no mention about, you know, to me, feminism is also about not just women's right to choose and the fact that we should not be domestically abused, but it's also about, you know, domestic workers who don't have the same rights as everyone else, who are often not paid fair wages, whose employers withhold their wages. It's about migrant women in detention centers. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that white women's and Latina women's wage gap. Okay. So the wage gap between white women and Latina women is wider. It's bigger than that of white women to white men.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So to me, feminism is about all these things. And therefore I am like a super feminist because I care about all of these things. But mm-hmm. it does become difficult when feminism is viewed at only through white women's lenses. And yep. the book that I brought informs a lot of how I think about feminism and about the history of feminists. It's called Chicana Movidas, and it's a lot of Chicana Mexican-American feminists who are giving us a history about feminism in the 60s and 70s that I had never heard before. Right? Mm-hmm. And I had never heard of these feminists and everything they did for all women. And so I pulled it out last night because I wanted to see just, you know, how these women felt about feminism in the 70s. And it turns out they felt kind of the same. Mm-hmm. So I think part of the problem is also we've never really reckoned with the harm that white feminism has done to feminism.
Mm-hmm. I think that's such an interesting point. And one thing that I got from Goldberg's piece was it seemed to me like she was sort of doing the "a vibe shift is coming" thing. Like, we're coming up on a backlash and we better get ready. And I, like, she talked to Susan Faludi, who wrote Backlash in, like, I think 1991. Okay. But it was all about, like, the cultural clawback that happened in the 80s over gains that were made in the 70s. And I find it to be really interesting, Julissa, because what you bring up is that, like, there's a backlash that's coming from the left because the left sees it. And the left and marginalized people who are not, like, you know, the white suburban female voter, you know, that a lot of times is, like, you know, pictured in the pink pussy hat and women's marching and all that stuff. I think that part of the backlash is coming from people who are like, feminism has never served me, so, like, why would I identify with it? And then the other part of the backlash is coming from, like, conservative voices who are like, haha, like, feminism should not exist, period. Like, you know, like, there's, Julissa, you say that, you know, it should serve more people and it should actually address concerns that impact all women, like, regardless of their socioeconomic status, it should be more intersectional. And then we have, like, a conservative backlash that's like, yeah, fuck these ladies, go home and work. Dana, I wonder what you thought about the article and whether or not you're seeing this backlash happening already?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Jaleesa's dead on in terms of like the article did not cover the broad range of, I think, problems with like the word feminism. It's like a pillar that too much is being, you know, trying to be supported by that one word. Like there's like a broad range of issues that the word feminism is trying to encapsulate, and to not a successful degree. I think what the article was really touched on for me that I think I hadn't really seen in print before was this idea that feminism won a bunch of symbolic victories in terms of like, for a period, feminism was really popular and trendy and you could wear t-shirts in public that said, I'm a feminist. And that was great. But because there was that influx of just visible representation without much behind it, like mm-hmm. while we were winning these symbolic, I think like arguably capitalist victories because companies were realizing it was profitable just to slap feminist on things and it would sell more, like Republican lawmakers were winning actual tangible victories. And mm-hmm. so then rightly, especially marginalized women who weren't seeing the benefits of feminism being plastered everywhere when it was just like, you know, privileged white women who were making a profit from this, like, of course, we're all going to feel like distanced and a little bit betrayed because the victories hadn't been actual policy victories.
Mm-hmm. I think that the capitalist aspect of it is interesting. Emily Favreau and I had a longstanding running joke where whenever we saw a shirt that said something about feminism on it that cost more than $100, yeah. we would like take a picture of it and send it to each other.
Yeah. Wait, Emily and I did that too.
That's so funny. Well, you're cheating on me.
Cheating on us.
That's fine. If I'm going to...
Merge the text.
Yeah, if it's going to be an inside... I think that's a great inside joke to have with a lot of people because I think, Dana, you're totally right that it once people realized it was something that could be sold, it got kind of defanged.
Yeah.
Like it became, instead of like, okay, feminism is about ensuring equal access to reproductive care for all women and all people who need reproductive care, regardless of their income, regardless of their socioeconomic status, whether or not they have children, whatever their race is, they should all have access to healthcare that is quality. That seems like something that we should have always been fighting for.
Yeah.
Not like I felt like through the marketing lens, it kind of became every woman deserves to be beautiful.
Yeah, it's like women should be empowered, but it didn't mean anything. It just meant like, I guess, continuing to make money in these like profitable ways that didn't actually challenge anything.
Right, right. Alyssa, what do you think?
So it was interesting because the article hit me a little bit different than I thought it would, because the reason I knew off the top of my head the date that Backlash was published by Susan Faludi is because I was a sophomore in high school. And we went to the bookstore when it came out. You know, I think we saw Susan Faludi on the Today Show or something. And we like went to the bookstore and we got the book. And it was like our Bible. Like we carried it around. We quoted parts of the book to each other. You know, it was like a very meaningful thing. And then my freshman, it was maybe 2 weeks into my freshman semester in college is when President Clinton signed the Violence Against Women Act. Right, which I remember so vividly too, because Lifetime TV for Women was one of the only times a television network had lobbied Congress on behalf of anything. And I remember there were these commercials and they were really a part of making sure here was this TV channel that women watched and they were like, we fucking hear you. And we make all these shows about women who get beaten up and like, maybe we should do something about it. And so that was a time like when I was so young that I remember like action, like shit was happening, you know? And now here I am many, many, many years later. And we're doing an entire show about whether Roe is going to be overturned this week. Yeah. And so when I really sat down to think about it after I read the article, I thought she made some, you know, very good points, which is like we've turned it into like feminism has become sort of like something for social media, you know, mm-hmm. like something to buy accoutrements to express your support, right? You've got the mug, you've got the hat, you've got the sweatshirt. Do I have sweatshirts? Sure, I do. Not going to pretend like I don't. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think that, and at the time, you think you're supporting an organization, right? Like that's how it started. Organizations that were doing the work would sell merch so that you would buy it to give them money. And then it became just like any brand out there was selling this stuff.
Right.
And you were like, oh, you look back on it. You're like, why do I have that Gap sweatshirt? You know, it's like, I don't, it's like, and what was I doing and what was I thinking? And so I thought she had a lot of good points. And it's like, what is the intention of feminism now? And there's no one group that's the spirit. You know, I think also back when all of these movements started, there were far fewer organizations, right? And so now it's like, well, what organization's actually doing the work? And why am I donating to this one instead of this one? And like, what are your stated goals and principles? And I think that that's very hard to understand now. And because of that, it's people are less active. And I think also for people who've been active for a long time and they see all the backsliding, like everything that's happening with Roe, you're like, and the, like Julissa said, you know, the wage gap between Hispanic women and white women hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse, and it's worse than it is. It's like, what's happening then? Like, how is anything working?
Yeah. I do feel as though white feminism has felt like I got mine and like kind of abandoned continuing the fight for people who don't have what they need. You know, like I got my almost equal pay. Like our producer, Fiona, pointed out to me in a conversation we had the other week that in some cities, what women and men make, if they are similar education levels, is exactly the same. There is no wage gap. There's only a wage gap when you introduce different like race categories. And that is a concern. You know, that's not a concern that went away just because in some places white women get paid the same thing as white men. It should be a concern for every woman until all of the wage gaps are erased. You know, it's sort of like the most privileged people get what they want and then stop fighting. Julissa, I wanted to kind of talk about what you were kind of saying that the article implied that there was something wrong with feminism but didn't quite get to it. Do you there's a part of me that thought that maybe she was going to get into like semantic debates. Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Do you think that's what was implied? Like, I'm genuinely curious. Like,
yeah. Yeah. You know, so I think, so just a quick comment. You know, I think that when we say, you know, the wage gap doesn't exist in some places, it does still exist. Right. Mm-hmm. Because of what you said, like introducing race mm-hmm. to it. But like you can't disconnect the two.
Yeah.
You know, so I think even like, and I think that's to me the biggest problem with feminism is that it always centers white women. Mm-hmm. And once there is no wage gap for white women, then we go around saying there's no more wage gap in
right.
these cities where it's like, actually, no, there's still wage gap.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, once we say, oh, the U.S. has like low mortality rate for giving birth. And it's like, well, no, because black women are still dying when they're giving birth at like much higher rates. So there's still a problem, you know? So I think that's, to me, that's like one of the biggest problems. And you kind of mentioned it, right? When you said, is feminism sort of one of those things where once the most privileged are good, then we sort of like put our little tennis shoes to the side, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I mean, just to jump in real quick, it reminds me of what that, I think senator from Louisiana said about his state's maternal mortality rate. Mm. Basically, like, it's only high because of black women. It's like,
right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Senator Kennedy,
well,
thank you so
high,
much.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, like, so it's high among
women.
Yeah,
among
like,
women.
What the fuck are you talking about, sir? Right. Like, that was a moment where he was America's foremost white feminist in the way that you're talking about it.
That's exactly kind of, I think, the kind of framing of these issues that always centers white people in this struggles. And when we do that, you know, we're missing a big part of the fight, and we're missing a big part of the people who could really be energized mm-hmm. to be part of the fight, who don't feel like our needs are being served or centered in this conversation. So I think that that kind of leads into your question about, was she talking about semantics? I mean, a little bit, I felt like she was going there and then she stopped herself, like, oh, maybe some of these things are valid and it's not just like petty little infights. Right. But, you know, I mean, I think even towards the end, she says that it's like, it's painful, right? Like it's painful how feminism is being attacked from so many different, in so many different directions. And whether fighting about the things that are wrong with feminism leads to then less rights for women overall. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I do think she was kind of going there. And I think you can do both things. You can be critical of the movements in which you are in. And at the same time, yes, we all collectively should have similar things that are driving us. Right. Like we all should want there for women to have a choice about what to do with their bodies. We should all be behind like women getting this paid the same as men. Like, yes, and those things are getting attacked from the right. And I think we should try to build movements that can withstand the very needed criticism and change that needs to happen with these movements. And at the same time, keep fighting against, you know, the quote unquote, like real enemy. Like, I think we should be able to do both of those things, because if you don't have a healthy movement, if you kind of don't have a strong movement, then any push from the right is going to topple it, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got to make sure you've got a strong base. And I don't think we do.
And I will argue that when, because feminism has sort of been defanged, as you said, and become sort of this commercial thing for just like any company to slap on a t-shirt, and it's become, or at least the symbolism of it has become sort of choogy, for lack of a better word, it diminishes our ability then to mobilize for the actual important policy changes that we need. Then we don't have that, you know, those symbols no longer have the power that we need in order to galvanize and make people excited so that we can actually make policy changes.
Mm-hmm. You know, as we're having this discussion, I have been thinking a lot about a stat about Gen Z. And Gen Z is much more queer identified than any generation that came before. I think 1 in 6 members of Gen Z are queer. And so there's a part of me that thinks that having a conversation about like men versus women, you know, in such a binary way, will be seen not as passé, but as a little bit outdated within a few years. I don't know. Like, Alyssa, what do you make of that?
I think that's probably true. And I think that means that there need to be new alliances, for lack of a better word, because like what's not diminishing is the role of white men, you know? And so I think that, you know, if we look at how the pie is divided, if we're talking about like work, right? Like professional jobs or whatever, like the amount of like white men is not shrinking. It's just that the one piece of the pie is, you know, available to everyone. I think there just needs to be more alliance building, because like the real changes and the space that needs to be made for other people to have a seat at the table is not increasing. They're just making like smaller groups of people, right, fight against each other instead of the people who really still retain all the power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Here's something that was brought up in the article that has been like haunting me, and that is the characterization of feminism as cringe, and whether or not a movement should even care about whether or not it's cringe. Like, aren't social movements kind of, by their definition, confrontational, sometimes annoying, interrupting, you know, aren't they kind of inherently cringe? Julissa, is there, like, should feminism want to be cool?
That's a funny question. I guess it depends on, like, who is describing it as cringe. You know, it's like if the right is describing it as cringe, then like, who gives a fuck? Like, I don't care what you think, you know, like, yeah, you can think I'm cringe, whatever. If it's sort of like people who are on the left and who see like the problems and who you know, think that it's cringe, then like maybe we should kind of look at it. But if we're being called cringe because we're not cool, then like, yeah, who cares? Like that doesn't matter. You know, what is being cool anyways? Mm-hmm. Like, what is cool?
I will say the problem with being cringe, I agree completely that being cool doesn't matter, but it also diminishes, I think, the ability to like get young people excited into what the movement actually could be.
Yeah, I think that some of what feels a little bit cringe to me, just like as a cultural observer, is that there are people who really were a part of something that made a political difference at a time. Remember like the Women's March, going to the Women's March, and there are these like middle-aged white ladies all hanging out in groups, you know, and like carrying signs, and like the people who live in the $5 million homes and put the signs in their yard, they're like, in this house, we believe in science. Love is love, like that sort of a thing. But you know, they would be the first people to call the police on a homeless person who was like camped in the, you know, yard between the sidewalk and the street. I think that that's maybe what the cringe of it all is sort of like there's a sort of like NIMBYism in feminism where it like doesn't seem to want to engage with the stuff that's like confrontational. I don't know if I keep using that word, but I don't know if like social movements should just be all fun all the time. I think that in a lot of cases, it's just like what you're doing is you're going to be annoying until things change.
One of the authors cited in the article specifically says what is cringe is that the movement has tried and failed, and that's what makes it cringe. And I totally disagree with that.
Yeah.
To me, it is cringe to have failed and not admit you're failing. Like, it's cringe to be like, we're fucking killing it when you're not fucking killing it. That is cringe. But to try and fail, I mean, so should no one fucking try? I mean, that literally undermines every movement happening right now that hasn't seen radical success. And so I totally disagreed with that person's point in the article that to try and fail is cringe. That is wrong. I think that is wrong.
Yeah, and I also would say that it's not a complete failure, you know, like
right.
For many years, a lot of, if we're talking specifically sort of about women's reproductive rights, a lot of women and other people with uteruses have been able to get abortions and have been able, you know, like it's not perfect, but certainly women have had more rights since, you know, Roe v. Wade was first brought to the Supreme Court. That's just a fact. We have had more rights. Mm-hmm. Have they been perfect? No. Did we maybe take our foot off the pedal because we thought, oh, we got it now, we're good? Yes, while the right never has taken their foot off the pedal. You know, the moment Roe v. Wade happened is the moment they kept mobilizing. I wouldn't even say started, they kept mobilizing. They were even more energized, and they have made it their single number one purpose to overturn Roe v. Wade, and they have not stopped, you know? And I do think we kind of took a pause. And so it's time to put our shoes back on and get out there.
Mm-hmm. You know what really strikes me? Every time there's a moment where it seems like these rights that people had taken for granted are suddenly very tenuous, or people realize that they're tenuous, I feel like people who have been plugged into this have to explain over and over again how bad things were very recently. You know, like, I feel like every single time I'm like, hey, have you heard about Buck v. Bell? You know, Buck v. Bell, the Supreme Court case that still stands, that made it legal for the state to sterilize people against their will. Like, that stands. That is a Supreme... In the state of California, for example, was forcibly sterilizing prisoners until shockingly recently. I think that there's just... I feel as though sometimes I am just on a hamster wheel of re-explaining this stuff over and over again. Like, you know, birth control was illegal up until, like, 1964 in some places. Yeah, a woman couldn't get a credit card without having her husband's signature until the 70s. I feel like everybody should know these things at this point.
Yeah.
But every time something like this comes up, people are like, what? I had no idea. It's almost like people deliberately don't listen or don't like care to retain any information about like how tenuous these right, the rights that we do have are. Julia, so you look like you are thinking about saying something.
The only thing I was going to say is that, like, yes, I do think some of the blame is on us for not knowing, but also it's like you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like also our educational system doesn't teach us any of these things. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't remember learning about Roe v. Wade in like history class. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, where do you learn these things from? Like, where?
TikTok at this point.
Literally TikTok.
Now TikTok. And then it's also like, okay, well, we can go to TikTok, but also, you know, misinformation. So yes. It's like, are we checking the sources, you know?
Right. Right. And places for people to learn about these things, like libraries, public schools, are under attack across the country. So while we're in a time when information is like technically more available, we are losing people who are able to help us sort the information. Librarians are people who should be able to help us with like media literacy and to obtain information. And there's not enough of them. Teachers are not teaching classes that can be construed as making people feel bad for who they are, which usually just includes making white guys feel bad for who they are.
Yeah.
It just seems like we're sort of up against it. And I guess maybe I'm going to check myself now because I can be frustrated. I'm like old, right? I can be frustrated that people don't know about things like, you know, Buck v. Bell and the history of reproductive rights and reproductive justice in this country. But maybe, do you think that Goldberg's piece was getting at the fact that for young people, maybe the barrier to entry for feminism is a little bit almost like strident? Like where, Dana, you're reacting to that.
I almost feel like the word feminism, because we don't have that incredibly clear goal now that I think feminists had in the past, where it was like, protect Roe v. Wade, you know, pass the Equal Rights Amendment, like one consolidating thing. I think correctly at this point, like feminism has a lot of irons and a lot of fire. It is harder for young people who aren't as educated on the history of the movement or understand how tenuous the victories we've won are to find out, like, what is feminism doing other than selling T-shirts for mm-hmm. to make rich people richer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
I mean, and like the frustrating part about like the whole history of it too is that I bet you anything that there are, you know, I mean, I don't think we're old, but since you called us old, Erin,
there's a whole generation of adults. I feel like you're old when there are people who are like 25 who are in a different generation than you. When there's like adults coming, oh Fiona, thank you. You're not old, I promise. I mean, thank you so much. You
know, I definitely don't feel old. I definitely have a heart that is like a lot younger than I actually am in years. But I bet you anything that there are quote unquote, and those quotes are Erin's quotes, old feminists, old gals who don't know about a lot of history, you know, who don't know about the Madrigal 10, the women in Los Angeles who were sterilized against their will because they couldn't speak English. And the judge said that it's because they couldn't speak English, that the reason they were angry is because they got sterilized and therefore could not fulfill their quote unquote Mexican duties of rearing a large family, right? Like there is so much history. I mean, has anybody heard of like Martha P. Cotera, who was like an incredible feminist in the 70s, who was there at, you know, the women's meetings, who was complaining about Chicanas not being involved in those meetings? Like there's so much more history that people don't know. So it's not just like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's totally so much stuff that people don't know. And I don't think that should feel or that should be a barrier to entry. It's like, let's try to learn it, you know, mm-hmm. let's be open to new information.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like the Tumblrification of like feminist and sociological discussion has sort of made it so people who are maybe new to the discussion end up exposing themselves to people who are at a very different level of knowledge and who are maybe frustrated or tired of explaining themselves what feels like over and over again. And so sometimes when I say strident, I don't mean to be sexist. I was using it ironically, but I just wanted to clarify that. I think sometimes that it's almost like you have to be born a perfect activist or it feels like the community is going to, especially in social media, it feels like you can be punished for not just coming on like a perfectly formed person who knows exactly how to express themselves, who never gets anything wrong. And I think that we're just like,
like, I have yet to meet that person.
Person doesn't
exist. No, no.
Both in real life and in, like, history. Like, there's not a single perfect activist, even in the past. Mm-hmm. Even the best of them had flaws.
Mm-hmm. Right. I hope that Goldberg's piece about the backlash coming was wrong, but I feel like just the cyclical nature of things and the fact that, you know, Joe Biden is apparently our Jimmy Carter— I worry that we're coming up on, oh no, everybody was like, oh God, who's going to be the Reagan? Is it going to be Mike Pence? Is it going to be 8 years of Mike Pence? Sorry, guys. I think we're sort of in a moment right now where we're on the edge of things changing and backsliding and not for the better. And we're going to just have to figure out a new way to kind of rise from the ashes, because this is like a bad moment.
I will also say something that really pisses me off is like the rise of like ironic trad wifing. Like, you know,
the fuck is that?
Oh,
Aaron, do you know what I'm talking about? It's like,
yes,
young women are like rediscovering and like painting in the language of empowerment. Like, you could stay at home and just like take care of your babies. As if like, that's a new thing that they're discovering.
Oh, right.
See,
right.
As an evolving activist, I ask questions.
Yeah. Which I think part of feminism and my feminism is I'm like, that is wonderful. Like, every woman should have the choice to do what she wants to do. But they're using the language of activism to paint that sort of like retrograde thing as like a new, exciting, empowering thing where it's like, wait. Back up. Hold on.
Right. It's like the like Substack contrarianism comes for her housework.
Exactly.
You're just like, that's not a new idea.
Yeah.
It's an old idea.
Yeah. It's gone around that it's now ironic.
Right.
There was this one, and I wish I remember the people's names, but I don't. But there was this like on Twitter, there was this woman who's running for Congress, and she posted a picture of herself in a bikini and puts it next to a picture of a body positive model. And she's like, why are we celebrating her body? Like, I have 5 kids and I look like this. And like, why am I being made to feel ashamed for posting my body? I am proud. Yeah. I am proud of my body. And I'm like,
that is cringe.
Who's like, literally no one is telling you not to be proud of your body.
That is
she
cringe.
Literally said, oh, why is this woman allowed to be proud of her body, but I'm not allowed to be proud of my body? And you're like, who's saying you're not allowed?
Dude. Be proud of your body, girl. You look good. So Dude, does she, you know?
I think
right.
Pandemic really accelerated us all getting to the point where we conduct ourselves publicly as though we're arguing with a mirror. You know, like, have you ever had those like rehearsed, like, well, guess what? You're not going to, you know, like a conversation if you're having it in real life. Like, I would fully start crying because it would be such an intense confrontation. But like in a mirror, I'm like, oh yeah, well, you're not gonna.
Good for you that you have 5 kids and you look like that.
Yeah, 5 kids. I mean, good for you. That's a feat. Congratulations on your collagen that you were genetically gifted with. I'm sure you worked hard, but some of that is also nature. Okay, let's take a break. I think we solved feminism once again. I think this is like the 8th time we've solved feminism on the show.
We're problem solvers on this show.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like in that, this is my second 30 Rock reference of the episode. But do you remember the episode where Tracy and Jenna have shirts? They become the problem solvers, and one of them has a shirt that says "the problem." The other one has a shirt that says "solvers." Oh, what an incredible episode! Okay, let's take a quick break, problem solvers. When we come back, we'll talk about what we're feeling petty about this week.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, welcome back. You're still listening to Hysteria. I'm still here. Alyssa's still here. Dana's still here. And Julissa's still here. We are going to talk about what we are feeling petty about this week. But first, a little housekeeping. If the names Beyonce, Drake, and Wendy Williams mean anything to you, heard of them, be sure to check out this week's episode of Keep It. Not only will you get Ira and Lewis's uncensored opinions, but comedian and actor Joel Kim Booster stops by to discuss his new Netflix movie, Fire Island. Listen and follow Keep It wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't heard, this year's Crooked Media's Pride Fund is going to support three incredible organizations: Transgender Education Network of Texas, Trans Lifeline, Equality Florida. All three organizations provide community-building, gender-affirming, and life-saving resources to the queer and transgender community all year long. So we're excited to be helping out. To learn more and pitch in, visit crooked.com/pridefund. So next week, we will be pre-recording an episode for the 4th of July week because Crooked offices are closed and nobody's going to be working. So we're doing a special solicited advice episode where you can write in questions for us and we answer your questions. We all absolutely love doing these. They're so much fun.
I want to come back for that
show. Yeah.
You're calling it. Yeah, Fiona, mark it down. Julissa wants to come back for solicited advice. But yeah, these are always some of our favorite episodes to do. We love getting your questions. You can send it to us over email, hysteria@crooked.com. Sometimes I get them over DM. We prefer email just because that's easier to organize. But if you want to DM me on Twitter or Instagram, I can't guarantee I'll see it, but that's another way to get in touch. You can also, if you don't mind it being public, you can tweet it at us.
Yes.
I'm Morning Gloria on Twitter. And Alyssa is, were you Mastro 44?
Alyssa Mastro 44.
Alyssa Mastro 44. You could have just gone by Mastro Monaco. I wonder if that.
It was all taken. It was what? All taken. Anything close to my actual name was taken.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is a Mastro Monaco conspiracy.
It is.
Yeah, but you can tweet it at us. We'll put out some stuff on social also soliciting solicited advice questions. So you can ask us anything. You can ask us about like career. You can ask us about love. You can ask us about sex, but we will not answer the question.
We'll not
Alyssa
answer.
No. Does not like talking about sex.
I don't. Okay. I'm a modest lady.
Mastro 44 is in no sex zone or sexual mystery.
That's you can ask the question.
But are you allowed to like for example, like, can I answer sex
if you want to answer a sex question, but Alyssa's going to sit there covering her eyes because she, I don't know why. I just imagine like a Buster
Bluth. I won't
Bluth
cover my eyes.
Of.
I'll just be like, move on, move along. Nothing to see here.
I've got nothing
to
say.
I will help you help them find the clitoris.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So send us questions about anything and we'll pick as many as we can. We'll answer them on a show that'll come out, I believe, first week in July. So look forward to that. So let's get to the things we're feeling petty about. I'll go first because this is something I think we all have things to weigh in on. So, as Dana alluded to at the beginning of the last segment, there's always an article. Like, every week, there's, like, the article. Do you remember the Bad Art Friend article?
Yeah. I still think about Bad Art Friend.
I still think of the Bad Art Friend. Remember they wrote the cat person story?
Oh, yeah.
Being the article. And then they wrote the cat person story about me. being the article.
Yeah.
And then there's always, you know, some article. There was a great one this week that I was like, this is going to be the article. And it was about a woman who was like the queen of the NIMBYs in California. But then it got upstaged by other like the articles. And this is the one that came out on Tuesday. So it was a little too late for our episode planning purposes, but it was on The Cut. And I don't want to like pile on this writer because they're getting plenty on social media and stuff. I mean, look, all the tens of thousands of words I've written over the course of my writing career, I have gotten some shit wrong. And I've been real stupid about things in the past. And so everybody gets things wrong sometimes. So I want to, whatever. Let's just focus on this specific piece instead of the writer herself. So there's a piece on The Cut. Great publication. This piece is not good. The piece is called Canceled at 17. The article is the sad story of a teenage boy who one day found out that his name was on a list of people to look out for that was posted in the girls' bathroom at school. And this teenage boy, Diego, was canceled as a result. Now, let's talk about why he appeared on the list. Diego appeared on the list because when he was at a party, he showed his girlfriend's nudes to people without her permission. So here's what I feel petty about this week. This seems pretty obvious, but like the article was written in a very sympathetic way to the boy, not to the girl who had her nudes shown at a party. Don't do that. That's what I feel petty about this week. Don't do that. The person you're supposed to feel, that is a good reason to be canceled. Like if a bad reason to be canceled is like, you know, something that is not true, something that is, you know, like a decade in the past and you've totally moved on and you've made amends. Like this is a legitimate reason to be canceled for. You know what I got canceled for in eighth grade? I got canceled for wearing too much brown. Yeah, people get canceled for way stupider reasons in high school. Showing nudes to people at a party.
Can I weigh in here?
Yes, yeah. Of course.
Okay, you guys. So according to any episode I've ever watched of Law & Order SVU, not just cancelable, criminal. It's fucking kiddie porn. This is crazy. Yeah. How is this even a thing? How can you defend it? It's like I was so confused by the article because I was like, this seems pretty this clearly seems like a crime. This is
justified.
Yes.
Yeah. Canceled by the law. Yeah. No, you just broke the law. You're going to jail.
Oh, my God.
And can I also say, I thought it was a really interesting story, like in the abstract about like the way social media has changed, you know, teenage interactions and the way that like, you know, power and information are sort of tied. But you didn't have to frame that story as a quote unquote cancellation, which is already like a loaded, weird term. You could just be like, this girl had this violation happen to her. And this is the interesting way that her school responded. And isn't it different than when we were kids or whatever? But like framing it the way that it was framed was just baffling to me.
Yeah. See, that's why I didn't want to like pile on the writer. I think that it might have also been an editor
issue. I mean, no. 20 months after he developed a crush, 18 months after he'd fallen in love, .. Diego, who is enormously appealing. I'm sorry, no.
What does that
the
mean?
Writer, she deserves some of the fucking piling on.
I'm trying to be generous. I'm trying to be like, okay, like, but yeah, okay, fair, fair. Maybe I'm coming at this with a little bit of a bias, but that is a pretty big... That's pretty bad.
That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. And it's like, she's like, oh, you know, poor him. He got canceled because he appeared on this list. And so his friends canceled him. And I'm like, you know what? His friends should have canceled him when he showed them the pictures.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not because he made the list. It's because he fucking went around violating his girlfriend's or his crush's autonomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why he should be canceled.
Yes, that's a good reason. More people should be canceled for that. That should be something. Cancellation should be a deterrent of antisocial behavior. Yes. Cancel people. Anyway, that's what I feel petty about this week. Okay, Alyssa, what are you feeling petty about this week?
Okay, guys. I don't know if mine's... It's like partial petty, partial public service announcement. Okay. On Instagram stories, if you are posting a story, I need you to pay attention to your font size, okay? Oh. Because I can't enlarge it like I can do on main. And so it's like if you're reposting something from someone else, just take a minute. Use your thumbs, make it a little bit bigger. If you're typing something, think to yourself, can anyone but me read this with my perfect 20/20 vision? Because not even my bifocals can help me with half of your stories anymore. So that's what I want to say. Please make your shit bigger on IG stories because it is literally illegible.
Okay. That's that is very petty. Think of the bifocals, I guess.
You guys, look at these. They're so big and I still can't see half of what's on there.
They should do like a magnifying like iPhone cover. So something.
God, this has not been a good episode for me. I'm like, I might as well get my cane out. Be like, things are going downhill fast, you guys.
I think, you know what? When I do get to cane age, I'm going to think of it as another accessory.
It's going to be the baddest cane that ever was.
My cane's going to look like this.
Yes, ooh, exactly. Jaleesa, and you can come up and we can just be like the Golden Girls and we can have all of our canes walking through town.
So Jaleesa, you're going to have like a rock and roll McDonald's cane, essentially. Dana is going to be like
an old European.
Yeah, like she's got to have some noble blood type
yeah,
cane.
I want like yeah. a lion, you know, carving.
Like a gargoyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll tell the children riddles. They'll all think you're a witch. And then when you die, one that was the like feeble little boy who was the gentlest, kindest one will understand that you were just explaining that there's a treasure map in the cane.
Oh my God. All I want is to age into a witch. That's like, I want a Stacey London streak of gray hair. That's all I want.
Yeah, I think that's a great goal. Dana, what are you feeling petty about this?
Oh, gosh. I know that, like, you know, in theory, people have been wearing masks for, like, hopefully two-plus years at this point. But people have also forgotten how to cover when they sneeze and cough for some reason. And so I feel petty that whether you're wearing a mask or not, the polite thing to do when you sneeze or cough is turn away from who you're with and lift your elbow. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they haven't taught everyone this in school. They taught us this in elementary school. It is basic politeness. And when you're not wearing a mask, it's very important. I have seen people pull down their masks to sneeze and cough.
Oh, nightmare. Nightmare. Yeah, geez. I mean, I think we've all learned that it's the inside of the elbow now.
Yeah, it's the inside of the elbow. It's a perfectly nose and mouth shaped. It fits really well.
Mm-hmm. It's by design. It's one of the good design features in the human body.
Yeah.
There's so many bad ones, and this is one of the good ones.
I think cancel culture should exist for people who pull their mask down to sneeze. Those people should be canceled.
Okay, that's a good thing to feel petty about. Jaleesa, bring us home. What do you feel petty about?
All right. I love y'all. I really do. But please stop asking me to do shit for free.
Oh, God, I thought you were talking to me specifically. I was like,
I
was talking to the audience. I mean, and probably not Hysteria listeners, but this is what I'm feeling petty about. It's like, I already do a lot of free things. You know, I visit a lot of classrooms for free. It's like a teacher's always reach out and they're like, can you please come to my classroom? I'm like, yes, I will Zoom and answer your kids' questions, which I love doing. But if you are part of a company and this is your DEI budget, like, do not ask me to do things for free. Like, I make a living writing and speaking. Like, how do you think I pay for my mortgage and my blinky water bottle? I need money. I am not generationally wealthy. Uh-huh. And my labor is valuable. And no, I cannot do your corporate thing for free. So stop asking me. No more free things.
Yeah, I feel that.
Why? Why do people think that it like you get paid?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you about the like teacher thing. Like if somebody asks me to come to a classroom, for the most part, it's like, yes, they're buying their own markers. I'm not going to ask for a teacher to pay me for something. But I think that, yes, the expectation that writers and speakers do things for free is a little annoying. I was on the Church of Satan website the other day.
I knew you'd bring it up at some point.
Long story, because I want to start a Satan high school in Maine, because the Supreme Court just said that Maine's law that excludes religious schools from being able to receive scholarships for students is unconstitutional. So I want to start a satanic high school in Maine. But first, there's several steps between me and Satan high school. I need to become a Satanist first. And I wanted to like figure out what that was about, because I was like, is this going to be weird? Anyway, Alyssa's got it pulled up. The Satan webs, the Church of Satan website, which, by the way, different from Satanic Temple, which is the one that I was actually interested in, but whatever. Church of Satan website, very funny. If you like cantankerous tones and like kind of, they refer to homes as lairs. And there's this one thing that's like, please don't ask us to, we charge a membership fee because we're not altruists. We're Satanists. We want money. We need money to do things. And I was like, I feel that, Satanists. I totally get it. Anyway.
I've been so tempted to change my IG bio. I do not do free things. Like, I feel like
you should. It's totally reasonable.
With a little parenthesis that says, unless you are a teacher and you're buying your own supplies. Because also if you're a teacher right. at like a private school like that has a ton of money, then like pay me. Like I can only do what I do because I get paid. Otherwise, I would have to go back to work on Wall Street. So if that's the future y'all want for me.
No.
Definitely not.
Keep asking me to do shit for free.
Still. Keep Jaleesa off the Wall Street.
Jaleesa, don't. I got a good tip from somebody once, which I've not implemented, but they said to create your own assistant account. And then it makes it so much easier for you to say no because it's your assistant saying no. I realize I just said that on a podcast. But.
I have an actual real assistant.
Oh, shit. Girl, you fancy.
and she does say no for me a lot. But then I feel bad because she's like, they keep asking and I've already said no. And I'm
that's a personal problem.
No. I was like, stop responding. Just don't respond.
Oh, my God. Okay. So you heard it here. Hopefully last, because she shouldn't have to repeat herself. Do not ask Jaleesa to do things for free unless you are somebody who is working in public schools and really could use a free gig from Jaleesa. But that's the only thing that you should ask her to do for free. Okay.
Yes.
Dana and Jaleesa, thank you so much for coming by today.
Thank you.
Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. Listeners, thank you for listening. You can write us a review if you like what you're hearing. Tell your friends if you like what you're hearing. And submit us your solicited advice.
Yes.
We love answering your solicited advice. And there will be more hysteria for you next week. I am from another planet. This nation, fuck Janet. But these girls can fan it. Y2K email and scan it. Don't take no for an answer. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Fiona Pastana is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis are the sound engineers, and our editor is Sarah Gibalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Thank you to our digital team, Nara Melkonian, Mia Kelman, Milo Kim, and Matt DeGroot. In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones you'll actually want to hear about. But we need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. So go to podsurvey.com/hysteria. Take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way we can bring on advertisers you won't want to skip. Once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/hysteria, H-Y-S-T-E-R-I-A.